My name is Peter Pallai. All my English friends call me, and my London-born children also call themselves Pallai, so let's stick with that. I was 7 years old when the Second World War ended. This is relevant to my relationship to music, because at that age, although I couldn't have put it into words at the time, but on some level I realized that music begins when words lose their meaning. However, my earliest sound memory was not really musical, but the rather funny comical sound of the traditional Jewish horn, the shofar, being blown in the small synagogue of my dad's birthplace. I must have been 4 years old at the time. During the Holocaust that followed, I lost 3 grandparents, 4 uncles, 3 aunts, and 4 first cousins. My mom was taken away to be transported to a death camp. My dad had been conscripted years before that into a Hungarian labor battalion, like most Hungarian Jewish men of military age, to serve on the Eastern Front, in my dad's case, mainly in the Ukraine. They both escaped and survived. I was being hidden by a number of incredibly courageous Gentiles, but I'd rather call them real Christians. The last one of them was a literally heroic single woman called Anna Hirchu, who was hiding, believe it or not, more than 20 of us Jewish kids in a rather small flat on the 4th floor of a tenement block. Her name now is carved in marble in Jerusalem as one of the righteous Gentiles. We couldn't go down to the air raid shelter in case someone shops us, so we had to sit through the Allied air raids and the artillery fire of the Red Army on the 4th floor. No wonder my second sound memory isn't musical either, but it is of bombs exploding and the terrifying whine of the Soviet rocket launchers called Stalin organs. Finally, the Nazis were defeated, and I was miraculously reunited with my parents. Needless to say, I was a pretty confused and wild child, very difficult to handle. When one of my aunts returned alive from Auschwitz, but without her daughter, who had been separated from her, then gassed and cremated at the age of 10, I heard her say, "If there is a God and we are his chosen people, then now he should effing well choose some others." And that's when I lost my religion. As I said at the beginning, I was 7 at the time. After the war, we were living on the 3rd floor of a block of flats, overlooking a small close where we played football, fought, and were begging bread from the Russian army store that had been set up there. It must have been early summer in 1945. I was down in the close, all the windows were open, and from one of them came the sound of a piano, someone playing Debussy's Clair de Lune. Of course, at the time, I had no clue what it was, but as it turned out, I have good internal hearing and have carried the opening of that tune in my head ever since. Back then, I was practically rooted to the spot. I had never heard anything that beautiful before. It gave me a powerful feeling of peace having broken out. There'd be no more killing, no more danger, no more hiding. I'm still sure of feeling that then, but I'm not at all sure if I put it into words in my head. I wanted to play the piano after that, but my parents sold our piano that had miraculously survived the siege of Budapest and the looting bought by the Nazis and the Russians. They sold it to get medicine on the thriving post-war black market to save the life of my savior, Anna, who had contracted TB. Although they did obtain a medicine, but tragically, it was too late. My parents bought me a violin instead and forked out for one of the most reputable teachers in town. I actually liked playing the violin and I liked classical music, especially the Romantics, although I had an aversion to Mozart, on whom my teacher was over keen, to say the least. Tchaikovsky's Piano Concerto in B-flat minor was my great favorite at the time. At school, I was terrible at my studies and even worse as far as conduct was concerned, but was surprisingly conscientious when it came to practicing the violin. This went on for years. During the summers, I was packed off for the whole of the 3 months' holidays to my aunt and uncle in a village by the Danube, where I could roam around and play football barefoot with the peasant kids, provided I practiced my violin every weekday. I promised, and I kept my promise, but with a difference. On my way to play football, I used to come across an old gypsy sitting in the grass with little kids taking turns, standing between his outstretched legs with their backs to him, playing the violin without any sheets of music, just playing by ear, with the old man manipulating their arms and shoulders from behind and telling them what to do. I always stopped, listened, and stared, because some of those kids were younger than me and still played by ear. They didn't actually play their own Roma music, but what they called Magyar Nota, meaning Hungarian song. They were composed pieces in a folkish manner and related to genuine folk music like country and Western relates to American folk songs. But in all the cafes and pubs, it was gypsy band that played that genre. The classic formation of a cafe or pub gypsy band would be a lead violin, a viola, a double bass, and a cimbalo, the last one being a hammer dulcimer mainly played by Hungarian and Romanian gypsies. At the time, this music was everywhere, a lot of it on the radio, and I knew a fair amount of those tunes. It wasn't my favorite kind of music, but it was part of my childhood. Seeing those little kids playing by ear, some of them getting a better sound out of the violin than me, made me stop and stay longer each time. One day the old man, not at all unfriendly, asked me what I was staring at. "I also play the violin," I said, embarrassed. "Show me." He asked one of the kids to give me his violin, and there I stood like a lemon, not being able to elicit so much as a squeak from the instrument, because I was totally lost without sheet music. There and then, and during the following days, he started teaching me, and I enjoyed playing those glissandos, trying to reproduce, alas, unsuccessfully, the rhythm, the passion they exuded. I didn't get very far with that, but it was fun. With summer over, I returned to my parents in the capital, and violin lessons resumed. After the first notes I played during my first lesson in September, Mr. Rados, my teacher, practically screamed at me. He wouldn't have any of his pupils playing like a gypsy. There and then I resolved not to have any more violin lessons. My parents were furious with me. I was grounded for weeks, but I was unbelievably obstinate and persisted. I was still trying to find music that fulfilled me. I was constantly twirling the button of our wireless, looking for something, but not sure of what. And one day, on a German station, I heard some trumpet, trombone, and clarinet playing very rhythmic, danceable music. It had a great theme, but after the theme, they seemed to be playing all over the place. It sounded as if they were playing by ear, making most of it up, with the trumpet in front and the others supplementing, embellishing whatever the trumpet was playing. It would have been difficult to memorize what they were doing with the theme, but somehow it all made sense. Then a man with a dreadful, gravelly voice started singing. After first being practically outraged at someone with such a croaky voice being allowed anywhere near a mic, I actually came to love what he was doing. Now, this music was free, it was emotional, it was very, very moving, an absolutely happy sound, and the players seemed to react to each other, much like in a gypsy band, actually even more spontaneously. It also gave me a feeling of total freedom, of joy, the sort of elation I had never experienced before. That was my first conscious encounter with jazz. I was 13, the year was 1951, one of the darkest years of Stalinist terror in my country, when jazz was banned and so was listening to Western radio stations. This first taste of forbidden fruit was served up by Louis Armstrong's band performing "Ain't Misbehaving Like Fats Waller," as I was to find out later, having carried the tune in my head like I did Claire de Lune before. It was the beginning of a lifelong love affair. In conclusion, I shall very immodestly read out something that I wrote somewhere else before. I love chess. It's my favorite art form. I'm devoted to this ever-changing music that absorbs almost any influence and turns it into something uniquely different. For me, jazz has always been the sound of freedom. It has uplifted and consoled me, cheered me up, made me rejoice, and made me cry like nothing else could. No other form of musical expression conveys to me, in turn, the same degree of passion, compassion, zest for life, love, laughter, pain, sensuous abandon, or even peace. It has been with me for the last 71 years of my life.